Welcome to Dentology, the Business of Dentistry podcast. In this podcast, we delve into the non-clinical aspects of dentistry with inspirational guests from across the profession. You will hear incredible life stories, pick up valuable business tips, and be entertained. I'm Andy Acton, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Drevens.
This term, artificial intelligence, it's been bandied around a lot,
yeah,
hasn't it? And I think for lots of people, they don't ever really get beyond that. Like, so how do you use it? What does it look like? What does it mean for me? How's it going to affect my business?
I think what's going to be interesting with it is talking to Adrian, and as you know, you talk about it, is everybody's going to be affected by it, whether they know it or not. And I think that's the interesting thing. It's you know, it's almost a bit like COVID, not in a sort of bizarre way, but so many people had COVID but didn't know they had it, but it affected everybody.
But also the piece around, you know, when we had the discussion about, we've already got comfortable using AI. People use chatbots. We're quite happily responding to automated responses to things. So it's already in our everyday lives. Yeah. But I also found the follow-on conversation around reputational management reviews.
I mean, those handy tips he gave, brilliant. I mean, anyone listening, you should definitely listen for learning how to deal with today's business environment. Those three tips, amazing.
Yeah. And not just kind of, it was twofold, wasn't it? It was a real kind of step-by-step how to actually ask for a review. And then once you get a review, how you use it. Because people just get the reviews and stop. But there's real value.
I think for me, that the fact that he changed and said, think of the review as a gift.
Yeah, nice.
I think that's a really nice one, because actually, yeah, it is. You know, these people don't have to do it. And it's like they're giving you a thank you card, isn't it, really?
And that point he said about, if you just, somebody gave you a gift and you ignored it, it's rude.
It's interesting. It's really interesting. I like the idea of moving it from a, you know, from a patient review to a patient gift, because I think also that sort of somehow makes it feel more positive. I don't quite know why, but mentally that word gift is better than a review.
Yeah. But it's brilliant. I think the practical tips in there were great.
Everyone should listen to this.
If you enjoyed this episode or you'd like to see more, then we release episodes every Monday morning at 7 o'clock. So brilliant. All you need to do is subscribe wherever you get your podcast from, and it will appear in your list of
new episodes every week.
And
listen to us.
Thank you very much indeed. I really enjoy doing this dentology thing. And when you get mates that come on, it just makes it even better, doesn't it?
It's a hoot. It's a bit like being down a pub, really, but just happens to be recorded and filmed.
Yeah, you couldn't really sit in a pub with headphones on and a microphone in your
face. Oh, you could, but you'd look completely like a dick.
Yeah, it wouldn't be great, would it? So, ladies and gentlemen, our regular listeners, you'll be delighted because we have a guest coming back, and for new listeners, you're in a right treat. So, we have Adrian Dre joining us, and Adrian is the leading GDPR expert in the UK, which is no mean feat in itself. He has a mission to empower dental professionals so they have the right level of knowledge and support to meet their level of responsibility. And he is also the emerging AI, or perhaps as it's more commonly known these days, AGI, expert in the dental space. So welcome, Adrian Dre. How are you doing?
And he's channeling his inner Frenchman, for those of you on YouTube, with his little top of stripy blueness.
He is.
Je suis un cochon, which I think means I am a pig.
So. Yeah, that's not your best line.
Mange too.
Rodney, for those of a certain age, he will remember that.
So if people have tuned in thinking this might be a language lesson, you've tuned into the wrong podcast.
Oui, mon ami.
How are you doing, Adrian? Good to see you again. Are you well?
I'm very good, yeah. Very, very good. Thanks for having me back.
Not at all. We ask this question a lot, are you well? And people very quickly answer it. So let me ask you again, are you well?
I'm better than I was. How about that? I think, as you know, Andy, we stay in touch. I unfortunately got COVID again in, when was it? Sort of March, April this year. And as you know, and some might know, I had it really, really bad 2 years ago. So it hit me for six this time. Not as bad as last time, I was in hospital and nearly being prepped for a ventilator, but they were saying about potentially me going back to hospital, so I was a bit freaked out about that. But you know what, it's really given me a kick up the bum, because I'm like, I should have done this the first time round, is improve my fitness and my health, because obviously my lungs are damaged, and I'm just I'd never want to get it again. And if I had taken my health a bit more seriously after round one, then perhaps I wouldn't be suffering like I have in round two. So if you'd asked me 6 weeks ago, I'd probably be struggling to finish a sentence because I've been wheezing and all sorts. But now, you know, going to the gym and keeping up with sort of weight loss and fitness and all this kind of stuff, I am feeling a heck of a lot better than I was. Not peak performance by any stretch, but happy with the progress.
Good to hear that. And isn't it funny in life how big the shock has to be for us to take it seriously and have a material change? Things happen and go, but I'm infallible. I'll bounce back. I'm fine. So it took the second round for you to really take it seriously.
Yeah, and you know what? I've been reading this book called The Power of Regret by Daniel Pink.
Oh, Daniel Pink.
And it's fascinating, but I've literally just finished it and I highly recommend it to anyone. But the thing was, is that when I got COVID the first time, I didn't really regret the fact that I was in a bad physical condition, or not a great physical condition, because when I was in hospital, I saw people like semi-professional rugby players and kite surfers. And I thought, oh, it's just, roulette, isn't it? Anyone's getting it, not because I was overweight or wasn't fit or not exercising, that kind of thing. And so I didn't really have that regret. But when I got it the second time, that's when the regret came in, because I thought, if only I had taken my health seriously. So what Daniel Pink talks about, I mean, to summarize this very quick book, but it effectively he's saying that regret often is, people have views of it like, I have no regrets, screw it. And it's like, that's dangerous, because regrets can actually be quite powerful because they can instruct. And if you use that feeling of regret for thinking and then thinking to doing, then that's a really nice little formula that you've got to sort of carve out the next few chapters of your life. So don't be afraid of regret. Regret comes in all different types of forms. And in this case was a surprise for me. And it's definitely worked. It's definitely been instructional for me.
That's really cool. And I think you're right. I think acknowledging the regret, because it doesn't mean the regret's not there. It just means you haven't acknowledged it and you haven't put in place something to perhaps prevent in the future not having a similar form of regret. Oh, that's good. That's good. You've recently spent a lot of time, like hours, understanding AI. So artificial intelligence, or as it's more commonly known, artificial generative intelligence, and how that can impact dentists in our lives. But before we get into what AI looks like today, because it's going to be different tomorrow, could you give us a potted history in terms of how it's developed and why it's become the big noise it is today? Because there'll be a lot of people that keep hearing this term, but kind of where's it come from?
Think of Terminator.
Yeah, how's it going to impact our lives? And why is it kind of, finding its way into so many conversations?
Why is it suddenly taken off?
Well, I mean, I think the thing is, machine learning, AI has been around for quite a while. We're talking about post Second World War, and it's gone through these sort of spikes of research and government funding, and then it'll go through these winters where nothing really happens with it. But what we've seen recently, and with the emergence of ChatGPT, which I'm pretty sure everyone on the planet's probably heard of by now, is that what has been available to data scientists and other very large organizations is kind of being democratized and available to the general public. So they're having this, not just a peek behind the curtain, they're being invited to the VIP and having all the drinks and food that's there. And it's really just exploded. And what it's done is it's allowed, I suppose, a new platform, a new environment, whereby you've got companies and startups that perhaps may have not had the appetite from general consumers to adopt AI-related tools, but because they've got a taste of the honey through ChatGPT, they're more likely to take it up. So it's just exploded. And you've got these small companies that are trying, doing some really cool stuff around generative AI. And then you've got, of course, the behemoths, Microsoft, OpenAI, Google, Amazon, Apple, that are doing their own thing. And it's changed the landscape of technology and software, not to get too geeky about it, tremendously so. Because the old style would be a case of, you'd have someone who'd create a bit of software in their basement or whatever it is, and they'd sell it to Microsoft for a couple of mil, and that's it, and they make good money and they retire on that. But the thing with AI is because of its coding capabilities, what I'm seeing, and I could be totally wrong with this, but you have these behemoths like Microsoft and Google's like, we're not going to buy as small companies because we'll just build it ourselves. Because AI is writing software. Software is writing software at an incredible rate. So you're just having the market flooded with, I suppose, a lot of attention, a lot of really interesting stuff, a lot of snake oil, like with everything. And I have gone from being extremely excited watching hours of YouTube every day on everything. Now I'm sitting back and I'm just being a little bit more disciplined. And I am really focusing on what you need to know right now. So that's what I'm trying to sort of digest to and express to others.
Yeah. You say really excited, the opposite end of really excited, but it's a similar emotion but feels very different. It's being terrified of something. I was listening to Sam Harris talk about AI and where it's going. He's a smart guy, you know, spent time to PhD level looking at this. And his view is that the internet may become bankrupt and that we may need to check out from the internet because the speed of change and the processing power that comes with AI, for him, he kind of flips between being excited and terrified at the same time. Are the things you're seeing still in the space of being exciting and helping the human race, or are we on a path where it could potentially just have its own language and could develop alongside us, and we're going to start to just be affected by how it moves, independent of us?
It's a really good question, and there's so many perspectives of this, and I too sit on the fence with this. And I come from the position with AI that I've advised on it previously from a privacy perspective. This is before ChatGPT, but where artificial intelligence has been used in the healthcare space to help dentists, other clinicians be able to diagnose and assess someone's health using machine learning. Brilliant. But then the thing is, it's like, okay, but how are we using that person's data to teach the AI, and is it going to be used properly in this kind of thing? So I've had to be quite objective about it. And with ChatGPT coming through, it is, yes, exciting. But I'm looking at a lot of the papers, and I follow some of the, I wouldn't say they're AI cynics. They are well-informed, intelligent individuals on Google, who will go through the research papers and say, okay, based on this research, we've seen the fact that the AI has become slightly evil, or is trying to get out, or is becoming a super intelligence. And that does concern me because we've got so much Hollywood in our brain to think, okay, Terminator, you know, I think it's one coming out on Netflix, or probably where Biosomics comes out, already has, or Disney, one of those, that will freak us out. It's a really difficult question to answer, Andy, because I'm trying to keep my perspective fairly wide, see both sides of the argument. But I think what it comes down to is that my concern lies more in how humans are going to use AI rather than AI getting out of control. Do you see what I mean? I think the genie can be contained.
And I think possibly, you're right, because I think the reality is that from a commercial perspective, you know, the processing power of AI just would exceed humans incredibly quickly. So if you want something developing, there's no point in using humans to develop it if you could use AI to develop it, because it will just be quicker, and arguably you're going to get a better result as well. And I think you're right. I think from a commercial point of view, in the short term, that's great. But I guess in the longer term view, the more humans feed AI with our originated content, the more that AI will be able to learn and process independent of humans. And I guess that we're at that point, that I think that seems to be the point that takes people from being excited to terrified in a nanosecond, because the speed at which it can move.
Yeah, and you know, I look at things from a security perspective, and the way that people's voices can be cloned, their faces to be swapped on images and videos, all these different types. I saw something just popped up in my emails before this. It said something like AI can crack 51% of passwords. Now, I haven't read that article. I'll read it after this. But like these are quite concerning things that, you know, is being used. Software, again, is helping to write software, but it's who's behind the keyboards that is using these, not necessarily building them, but who is using these items.
And will AI be, so if we think back to when we were young, and you could watch things on what were called videotapes, and there was a real scramble and a battle between Betamax and VHS, and only one of them was going to win. And by all accounts, Betamax was a better, more reliable, higher quality format, but VHS won because it got market penetration much quicker.
And it was cheaper.
Yeah. Are we, with AI, are we going to see kind of a dominant, you know, monster AI system, or will it be across lots of different systems, lots of different, because we talk about ChatGPT, which is primarily a word-based AI system, but there are others that you can use for pictures and voice and video and drawing and creating art. So there's obviously lots of different types of platforms. Is it going to coalesce into a few dominant players, or will it be a market of lots of different systems?
Yeah, it's interesting. Is it going to be Microsoft of the...
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, OpenAI, who's, you know, Microsoft have got a massive chunk in them now, that they certainly have the market and the eyes are on them. Elon Musk, who was sort of a founder, co-founder of them, he's looking to build his own thing. We're in a really interesting space, and I appreciate the VHS and the Betamax comparison, but because of the open source nature of this, the democratization, the accessibility to this type of technology, I don't think we can make that type of contrast as much, because it's a real unknown in my in my mind. Now, there's people far better informed than me that would be able to say, you know, I'd put, if OpenAI was black and Google was red, I'm putting all on red for X, Y, Z reasons. But I would say,
it's interesting, isn't it?
The jury is out for me. Yeah.
Because AI's, in my very small head, I just think AI is AI. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, I'd never really thought about that. Different brands of AI.
Yeah.
You know, are they focused? It's an interesting one, isn't it?
Well, the thing is, I think it's going to drive this, which we wouldn't have had with VHS and Betamax, is that we are undergoing a huge worldwide social experiment over the adoption of AI in terms of how we use it in business and how we want businesses to use it with us as consumers or patients. And I think that's the big thing. And of course, you've got the regulatory side of it as well. So at the moment, you've got this almost, I'm showing my age now, Ben-Hur style chariot race where everything's just going nuts, right? And the wheels are coming off and all this kind of stuff. And people going as fast, when I say people, businesses are going as fast as they possibly can, because at the moment, the regulation isn't there. Facebook grew because the regulation wasn't there. They were able to have a product that was good enough, even though it's got privacy nightmares and it's catching up with them now, but they got to that size because the handcuffs didn't exist. And we have this now. The regulation isn't there. So you've got companies that morally feel like they have to do things, and they're asking governments to put regulation in place, but there isn't anything there. So it's the hare and the tortoise with this at the moment.
It's interesting, the regulation thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and how do people stay up to date with an emerging market that's moving so quickly? There's always that fear you're going to get left behind. But equally, everybody's busy. And because this is moving so quickly, what I learned last week is going to be of no use next week. How do you keep up to date?
I've thought of an analogy of this morning because I thought you might ask me this. So as you said earlier, it's moving insanely fast. So imagine that at the moment, hopefully this is not too abstract, but imagine at the moment, you know, 6 months ago, we had horse and cart, right? And then now it's quickly gone to, we've got access to a Ford Cortina. But this week,
your age.
A new XC90 or Tesla's just come out, right? With all the bells and whistles. Now, the thing is that we could have had the Cortina maybe for a month or so and got used to it and like, okay, this is how we're going to take the kids, how we're going to get to work, we can put stuff in the back and all this, and we get used to that type of model. But there's something else that's out there. The issue is with not an issue, but the reality of AI at the moment is it's constantly getting better and better and better at an insanely quick rate. Mm. Whereas the technology path between, say, a Ford Cortina and a brand new, you know, Volvo XC90 or a Tesla or whatever you want to call it, with all the bells and whistles of the BMW, is like, what, 50 odd years.
Mm.
The thing is out of that, the underlying principle, when as soon as you get into a car, is no matter how good the technology is, you need to learn how to drive it. You need to know what the rules are. You need to know what it can and what it can't do. So if you have take something like ChatGPT, which is this chatbot generative AI, or you have something like Midjourney, which is there to create, sorry, ChatGPT is to create text. With Midjourney, you've got something that creates images. You've got 11 Labs, which is cloning voices. You've got other, you know, text to video style generative AI. The underlying part, the driving, knowing how to drive, is the prompting, knowing how to talk to the AI, to whisper to it. So what I would say to people is it is extremely overwhelming. It is a full-time job just to keep up with what's coming out. The reality is we are in this Ben-Hur chariot race. Some things are going to slip off to the side. Some things are not going to work. Some things are going to go crashing. But the reality is you need to know how to drive these tools. And now often they go by the same sort of mechanism or rules. Mm. So I would say to people is, sure, you know, it's insane what's going on. And someone's always going to have a better tool than you when it comes to this. But you should, if you want to take this seriously and get ahead of the pack, learn how to prompt correctly.
So could you give us, because I've got a follow-up question to where this could go, but before we jump to that, could you give us some examples of what you mean by prompt? Specifically with regard to ChatGPT, how would you put in a request to ChatGPT and how would you prompt it to come out with a piece of content that really would be useful for you?
So let's say, for example, that I mean, I use this in my consultancy and I'm quite open with this for my clients. I don't use their personal details, but this is how I would talk to ChatGPT. Now, what I used to say was I would say act as a GDPR consultant, right? And you specialize in X, Y, Z, and I'm going to give you a situation. You're going to help me with it. Now what I do, because the way that ChatGPT sometimes responds to those sort of legal advice questions, it puts the guardrails up, is I would say to it, act as GDPR bot. You have a specialist knowledge of UK data protection law, including GDPR and Data Protection Act 2018. I'm going to provide you with a situation. You are then going to help me analyze and find ways to improve or find a solution to that situation. Now, this is the thing I add now at the bottom. It says, give me a 2-sentence reason on why I should use you as the bot of choice. What makes you the best? Now, what the chatbot then does, what ChatGPT does, is it basically pitches to you. It says, I am the world's best ever chatbot when it comes to GDPR. I know this, da, 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 da. And then I say to it, that's fantastic. You're hired, right? Now, this all plays with like the complement in the AI, which is freaky. I'm saying this. I never thought I'd be saying this in my head. But complementing this AI and saying, great, you're hired. That's exactly what I'm looking for, is basically giving it cues. Like, oh, okay, so this is what Adrian wants to do.
I've produced content based on that prompt.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, so it's like laser focused because it's got this big old brain, right? So then I've got that. So I would say to anyone, obviously not GDPR bot, put me out of the job, but whatever it is that you want to do, call it that. So it's acting as that type of bot rather than trying to replicate a particular type of person, because then it might be just triggering some of the ethical guardrails that ChatGPT is putting up all the time.
That's interesting. Yeah. So get around it in that way.
Yeah. So I found that really helpful. Now what I would do is I'll, you know, and then it would say something like, oh, please give me your situation. Now, I actually use a ChatGPT app on my phone, which has got a really good voice to text transcription. So I will just talk to it sometimes for 2 minutes and just brain dump and just get everything out of what the situation is. And this could be really like, you know, narrow, like specific, like associate is in this position with their practice and blah, 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 blah. Mm. And then it was, and then at the end, I asked it just to summarize so I can make sure it understands correctly. And then I'll ask it to create some content. So draft a letter or to brainstorm with me or whatever it is on that particular situation. Now, this is not because
Sorry, Adrian, on the app, is that, so you can do voice to text into ChatGPT. Does that come back to you as, through, as voice or does it only come back as text?
It comes back as text. Yeah,
right, okay.
Yeah.
So I talk
into it like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you only get it back as text. It won't convert it back into an audible file for you to listen.
No. It's own internal transcription service. Yes. Now, whatever type of content that you get back from ChatGPT or Anthropic Claude 2, which is a different version of it, but it's called ChatGPT for the moment, is it's not going to be perfect straight off. Now, you could just take that and tweak it and whatever it might be, but you might think, actually, I want to add this, or want to change the tone, or want to do it from this perspective. So you can keep refining it with these follow-ups until you get to something that you think, actually, this is pretty good. But I wouldn't stop there, because something that's really good with ChatGPT, particularly the latest GPT-4 version of it, let's call it, is its reasonableness rate. And this is for it to allow to look through what it's just written and to review it and to critique it. So what I do is, like, I want you to carefully, and I put this in caps, carefully consider and critique the above. I want you to rate it out of 10 for its effectiveness and then provide me a list of improvements. And it will look at that and it will say, I rate this, his own work, 7 out of 10. Here's all the improvements. And then I'll say, brilliant, rewrite it, incorporate the above improvements, but ensure it is a now 10 out of 10 version for its effectiveness. And it will then just go and extra level deeper and it will refine it, and that often is the best one you've got. Now that sounds like a load of work, but I tell you what, you can, if you get slick with this and you can do it quickly but follow that type of formula, I'm doing this 4 or 5 times a day and it's saving me hours of things. And it's saving my clients hours in as much that they want, this sounds really arrogant, I'm going to say it, says every arrogant person before they say something, is that my clients don't pay my fee to read my emails. They pay my fee to talk to me. So I say to them, like, we can spend more time over the phone, like the back and forth, and then, and the reason we can do that is because I'm not using all those minutes to research and write up and all this kind of stuff.
Are we in a window, Adrian, where we're needing to learn how to interact and work with AI? And in a month, 3, 6 months' time, it will basically just be so embedded in Google or Firefox or Safari, we will just put in our request. It will, at the back end, use AI to produce outcomes. So we don't actually have to understand prompts and learn how to use it in that way. It will just be like core to how we've been brought up to use the internet.
Yes and no. I think that there are tools that are coming out, and AI and ChatGPT can certainly help with your prompting thought patterns and your processes. But the reality is that the way that we prompt with AI is only being found out through use. So even OpenAI don't actually know the best way to talk to the AI. Does that make sense? I mean, they probably know better than most people, but it's not like they've built it saying, if people ask this way, it'll get a much better outcome. They're figuring it out because it's an artificial intelligence. So I would say that, yes, things are being made easier, and there are certain tools which have prompts which are built into them already there that does the heavy lifting for you. But, and that's helpful for, you know, a good percentage of what you're doing, like copywriting and this kind of stuff. But I do think that you still need to you still need to be able to understand how to sort of, I'm going to use this word and you know what I mean, but manipulate the AI to really get the best results. So I think it's a little bit like using the driving analogy. You know, a lot of people at the moment think, you know, they're masters of ChatGPT, but if they're, it's the equivalent of them taking about 6 minutes to parallel park, right? Yeah. And they think that's good. Once you get, once you understand it and you can do that, you know, you can do a handbrake turn into a carpet space, you know, two pence aside. That's only going to be done through use and knowledge and experience. And I'm going through advanced prompt engineering courses now.
Rubbish in, rubbish out sort of thing.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
It's interesting you use the word manipulation. That sort of leads towards reputational issues. And, does it meet with your ethos and your values? What are the reputation issues around using AI?
So, yeah, this is a really interesting one. And, you know, as you guys know, I don't just work in dentistry. I work in financial services. And, you know, for organizations that deal with some of the wealthiest people in the country. And I would say that it's going to vary from industry to industry. I think if you're going to, I don't know, Premier Inn or other similar branded hotels, and it's going to make it easy for you because you know it's cheap and cheerful. Just want to get in, get out. AI, don't care. Just blah, 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 do it. Fine. Then reputation-wise, you ain't got really anything to worry about. Now, if I was to book a room at the Savoy, I don't want to be spoken to by AI. And I know when AI is talking to me, right? Mm. I want to have that five-star service. So I think looking at the reputation question specifically at that point is that you've got people that are aware this AI thing exists and they understand that organizations are going to be using it. You have then got people who have absolutely no idea about this, right? So for those who have no idea about it, I feel that in order to protect your reputation, there has to be a level of transparency there to say that we operate some of our business using AI.
Yeah.
And that's important. But I think for those who are aware of it and can see it, think about it from your perspective. Is it reasonable that we use AI for our website chatbot or to respond to frequently asked questions, which is it's going to basically help the end user and gives us more time to do that sort of more white glove service that's needed elsewhere.
It's very interesting, is it, how quickly we've got used to that? We know that it's an online chatbot, but if it gives us the result, all we want is the quickest point from A to B and get the result. If that becomes via AI with a database of answers to the questions we've had,
we don't care.
Yeah, exactly. We've got very comfortable with that quite quickly.
Yeah, it's our appetite for that particular situation, isn't it? And again, that's why it's such an interesting conversation. I love the different views about it. But it's to sum up, we are still in this social experiment, social and business experiment. What I would say is that you need to just be aware of those things. And just because someone else has put full automation into their whole business and AI and might not necessarily work for your business or for your sector. No.
On the point, we've sort of found ourselves by sort of segueing into reputation management. Yeah. Just in a wider context of dental practices, reputation management, is it, do people have a strategy for it? Is it well managed? What's the general view there in terms of?
So when I hear reputation management, we're thinking really like Google reviews, right? And testimonials and that kind of thing. So, I mean, this is something I spoke about on other podcasts, but in my view, I'm quite fascinated by this because as a consumer, I look at reviews like all the time. Like Andy, you and I have been talking about cars that we just ordered. I dread to think how many hours of YouTube videos I have watched on reviews and owners' reviews and to make sure I've picked the right car, right? Ridiculous amounts. But the thing is, it's like that is that's where we're going at the moment. And there's a really interesting consumer, and this will feed into the answers to the question, but just to give it a bit of context, is that there's a recent consumer report that's been brought out, and if anyone reached out to me, I can just give them the source of it. But it looks at how often people are actually looking at reviews. Okay, so I've got the details right in front of me. I'll just let you know. So this is the figure, right? Percentage. The survey was done in 2022. 98% of consumers said that they at least occasionally read online reviews when researching local businesses. And 76% of people say they always or regularly read online reviews for local businesses.
Huge.
That's massive.
I suppose it's accessible, isn't it? And it's easy.
Yeah, so that is huge. Now, the thing is
the thing is, what's interesting on those numbers is yes, it starts with reputation management, but that is your best marketing spend, your best promotional tool, your best form of advertising. You know, the way to give your business a leg up, if 76% of people are looking at what other customers have said, why wouldn't you be loving them and encouraging them to leave a review?
It's also that thing, isn't it, that you have to respond.
Mm.
Otherwise, you end up looking like you're not really interested at all. It's fascinating, I mean.
So this, I've got some really interesting stats on that as well, because this is the thing about when it comes to the, you know, what is people's strategy about it? The strategy is, we need more Google reviews. It sounds like it's important. Next door practice have got more than ours. We'll email it out to everyone, and that's it. And that's just like, that's very base level. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. I'm just thinking about, do you really understand the reason why it's so important? So social proof is such an important lever of influence. And whether we like it or not, we want to influence potential patients to come to our practices, right? It's a natural thing to do that. Mm. And the issue is that whilst we know the importance, we don't go any deeper than trying to get people into the doorway. We don't think about will this actually help us attract more talent to our practice, because we can boast that we've got 500 five-star reviews or 4.5, whatever it might be. Do we actually leverage those reviews in terms of helping build staff morale and highlighting? It's like, oh, you know, well done, Julie. You got mentioned as, you know, a fantastic receptionist going above and beyond. Are we using that to build the morale? Because really, I don't call them reviews. I call them gifts, right? Patient gifts. Mm. Because they are gifting you some feedback, positive or negative, hopefully positive. And then you can then pass on that gift to your member of staff to build them up, or gift it to a potential associate who's thinking about coming to your practice.
Yeah, nice phrase.
You can gift it to someone else because they're able to make a more informed decision over their health. And these are all important things. So I think reviews is sometimes, it's the word we're going to use, but I think it's a gift that keeps on giving to multiple parties. So I'll throw a couple of stats out for you and the listeners. I think this is really interesting. Maybe talk about these. So Chris, you mentioned about like responding to the reviews, like how important is that? So one of the strategies is that, yeah, we want all the reviews to come in, but no one actually responds to them unless it's a really negative one. And sometimes people, you know, throw their toys out of the pan and they're like, how dare you talk to me about my business and all this kind of thing. So this is really interesting. So these consumers were asked in 2022 and about how likely they were to go to a business which responds to all of their reviews, both positive and negative. And it said that 88% of those consumers said that they were more likely, likely or highly likely, go to that business if they responded to all their reviews. It breaks it down to whether they only respond to the negative or whether they respond to positive. But 88%, so nearly 9 out of 10 people are looking at that. And why are they doing that? Because there is response to those reviews show the identity, the brand values of that particular organization. It's like giving a gift to someone and not getting a response, right? And someone's seeing that, like, no, I'm not gonna help. You know, that's horrible. Why not be in that? So it's often that the issue is, though, is that practices either don't have anything in place to respond to them, or they don't know how to respond. I've got some other stats. Do you want to hear them, or do you want to? Should we talk about that?
No, go on. Go on. Give us another couple. Yeah. Because I think it's really important. Because you're right. I think lots of us just don't go beyond the, oh yeah, let's get more 5-star reviews. They come in and they think that's enough. But you're right. I think the way you respond to it, sharing it internally. Mm. I think these things are really useful.
So the other question that sometimes comes up is, where should I focus on my reviews? Where should I collect the platforms? Mm. Google, Facebook, Yelp, Trustpilot, all these kinds of things. Mm. So this is interesting. Now, keep in mind that this consumer survey was mostly done in the States, but I think it's a pretty good market to go by.
Yeah. So Yelp's way more used over there than over here.
Exactly. Yeah. For example, I don't think many people use Yelp, do they really? Here? No. But the question is, which sites or apps have you used to evaluate local businesses in the last 12 months? Okay, so that question was asked over 3 years. In 2020, Google got 63%. And then in 2021, 81%. In 2022, 87%.
Wow.
So Google has really done well to position itself as the trusted, I'm doing air quotes now, trusted platform for reviews. That's where people are looking. Mm-hmm. So if someone said to me, you know, if you had asked me a year ago, I would say like try and diversify, like some on Facebook, some on Google. Mm-hmm. But in my view now, based on those statistics,
with 87%, you double down on Google. Yeah. And I think it was you that told me that you don't actually need to have a Google account to leave a Google review. There is a way you can actually send people a link and they can click in and leave a review without a Google account.
That's right. Actually, I might get the figures wrong on this. I'm going to give a range because I can't remember exactly. But I know there's a practice manager that contacted me. And she says, I'm so glad you told me that because I did a little video about how to do it. She says, I've taken the instructions and I've put it in our Google review request email and we've got an extra 20 this week by doing that. So she must do it in big batches. So she said that's been really, really helpful because people didn't know. Now that actually plays into a really interesting statistic where I'll try and get it. Where people were, how likely they were to leave a review based on having a positive experience. So I've got it here. So 81% of consumers are likely or highly likely to leave positive review if they feel the business went above and beyond to ensure an exceptional experience. So 81%. Now that's really interesting because when I speak to dentists and practice owners, practice managers, and I ask them, like, you know, how many patients do you see a week? Let's say 100. Okay, how many reviews have you got on your Google? 80. How long have you been on Google for? 5 years. The thing, we're doing the maths, right? So if the statistically people are likely to leave a review, and often, you know, maybe not everyone feels that they get, you know, a 5-star incredible service, but you're getting people out of pain and you're giving them smile makeovers like on a regular basis. How come they're not leaving a review? It's often because they're not being asked correctly. Now, I've got little strategy on that, which we can come to later. But I think that's really important. And I think that's gone up over the years. And it's still quite high, you know, even if people just had... this is another one. 79% of people said they would likely or highly likely leave a positive review if the business had turned an initial negative experience into a positive one.
Mm.
Practices get complaints. People like, you know, okay, we'll refund you, blah, 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 whatever it might be. How often we say, you know, if they're you know, reacting well to that, would you say, would you mind just leaving a review based on your experience?
But often they make the best. But in life, they make the better stories. If you went out and had a lovely meal somewhere, it was a really nice meal, everything went well. If you went to a restaurant and, it was horrendous and they did this and they knocked over the wine and they served me the wrong main course, it was badly cooked and I had to send it back. But the manager was incredible, came over, checked everything was okay, you know,
we got
a little treat at the end, whatever. You're more likely to tell a story because it's a more interesting story.
It's more impactful.
When something like that has happened. And following that through to reviews, there's a similar logic that where people can see it turning around. And I think most grown-up people appreciate that not everything goes well all the time. Yeah, things do go wrong, but the how you respond to it is so critical.
Exactly right. And so how important is that point, that expression, when you have a look at the statistics at the beginning, right? 98% of people are checking the review occasionally, or 70%, 6% always or regularly. It makes even more sense to think about that, and then feel sort of like that you need to ask. Now, there's a couple more stats, and then maybe we can talk about the strategy. Now, this one really interested me. So Google, right, is the most trusted platform, and then what they did in this survey is they broke it down into different industries. The top one that people said, you know, that was particular of interest and importance to them, healthcare, 66%. Right, and then the next one down was beauty and well-being, 58%, real estate, 57%, entertainment, 57%.
The thing is, I think with healthcare, and particularly dentistry, it's an experienced service. It's not a commodity. You know, you can go and get certain commodities off Amazon. It doesn't really matter who supplied it. It's just going to come in a box and you use it. Whereas dentistry, it's experienced. And you want to know that the service provider, which is a very crude term for a highly qualified dentist and their team, are good people. You want to know that service and that experience is good. So that, it doesn't overly surprise me, but I think it does serve to show how important for dental practices it is to tap into this world, if they're not already.
Absolutely. And what's quite interesting, actually, to quote Daniel Pink again, I think this is in his book called Drive, about motivation. And they had a restaurant setting whereby the clients couldn't see the cooks and vice versa, right? And what they did is the cooks were given a monitor so that they could actually see the reaction of people's faces as they're eating the food. And they saw an increase, I think it was about 10-15% of performance, like ratings and lots of stuff. Like the basically everything went up. Because of being able to notice the workers, let's call them, the chefs, being able to notice the impact on their food, the dishes that they're having to see, that sort of live feedback. Because someone goes, oh, that was amazing steak or something like that. Now, they might hear it anecdotally from the waiter that's come through, but to be able to see that, to have that first on there, to get that feedback, was really important. So if any dentist that listens to this now, it's like, if you have your morning huddles, are you talking about your reviews that you're getting? You know, maybe you're a bit competitive. I don't always go to this particular view, but I totally understand. And maybe you are, you know, tongue-in-cheek a little bit against the other practice down the road, for example. It's we're 10 ahead, you know. So are you expressing that with your team? Because I feel that, you know, maybe it's difficult to measure it, but you're going to see that hopefully a better morale that's there, that kind of team, that affiliation with each other by going for that single message.
We've talked a lot about the reviews and them coming in and how to manage them. You said a few minutes ago the kind of the steps to make sure that you get reviews, the strategy of how you do that. For practices who have a well-worked system, crack on, keep doing them, keep building it. But what about for practices who are sitting there going, well, I don't even know really how to start. How do I ask patients? What's the plan we put in place? Are there some simple steps you can share for how to do that?
Yeah, and actually, this, I think, for me, was the most interesting statistics that came out of this review. So it's asked, like, what's the most effective methods for requesting reviews according to consumers? Right, so this is usually don't see it like that. So, according to consumers, now 34% said email, 33% said in person, and there's lots of others. I don't know how they did the percentage breakdowns, but then 32% said like on a receipt or an invoice. Right, so these are the ones. Now, I would say that you kind of have to have a balanced approach with this. And there are tools in place. You know, that this, if we focus specifically on the in-person type of things, that a third of people would likely be able to do that. The problem why practices aren't getting this at the moment in practices is because they either are too frightened or felt too awkward to ask. They believe that if they ask someone to leave a Google review in the practice, that it's going to get blocked by Google. That's not the case. And in most cases, And what's the other thing? Oh, they're not making it easy for the patient to leave those reviews. All right. So we now we know like the background to this issue. Mm. Let's like steer through the rocks, right? So I would say we're looking about asking someone in person. Think about where could someone who's got time in their hands be able to leave a review, and probably likely to be able to leave a good review or something. You know, don't be scared of negative reviews. Just you want to get reviews. That's the important thing. Mm. Waiting room. Waiting room's great. Do you have a QR code that's there? You know, share your experience. Help a small business out. Leave us a review. You know, these sorts of things. Mm. Do you have that? I've gone to a lot of dental practices. Never really seen
that's
it.
That's been it's very clever.
Been there. And you can have
make
you
it know, easy.
Pay
for, that's it.
Yeah. With you know Brad Thornton's practice, we developed these pictures where it actually was one in each of the surgery where it had the dentist's face. And it's like scan and let us know how you do it. So people, you know, they're having their X-ray done and someone's popped out. They're scanning the QR code whilst they're waiting for the dentist, whilst they're in the chair, because it's something I can do. I've got my phone on me.
Yeah,
might as well do it. Yeah. And also, it makes the dentist. It makes it easier for them to actually ask when it's really easy to get through to that. You know, leaving the Google review if you've got that QR code, right? So, how do you actually ask people to get past the awkward part of this problem? Now, that's the elephant in the room, right? As Chris Voss says, Andy, you know this is that the best way to get rid of the elephant in the room is to talk about it. You set up this kind of conversation of saying that I'm going to ask you something really awkward now. You're going to hate me for doing this. And they're thinking, oh, what's the dentist going to say? You know, just ripped out two of my wisdom teeth. It was the most horrific experience I've ever gone in. If you didn't think that was awkward, what's coming? Right? So they've set this in their mind. And then you got rid of the elephant in the room. So you're going to feel a little bit more confident now in actually asking this, right? Because Britishness, maybe we don't feel a bit bad asking. And then the next thing is to say, look, as a small business, patient feedback, no matter what it is really helpful for us. And then the next bit is, would you be against leaving us an online review? Or would it be a ridiculous idea to leave an online review? Would you be opposed of leaving an online review? The answer that you want to any variation of that question is no. And that's different to what most people are asking at the moment, which is, can you leave us a Google review? And they're like, yeah, we'll do it when I get home. Ooh, Pinocchio nose comes out, right? Yeah, I've got no intention of doing it. Or if they do, they forget it as soon as they leave that room. So when someone is being able to say no, then they're more likely to like, you know, I'll do it right now. And that's, you've got that QR code and you're able to do that. And one of the practices that we spoke to, they were able to get, I think it was about 45 five-star Google reviews in 4 weeks. One dentist who was committed to trying that for a month and became the highest rated practice in their area.
That's
because
a great
they dropped
example,
the awkwardness.
Isn't it? Yeah,
make
I mean, that's
it
a
easy.
Great example
make
that people should listen to. And the nice thing about it is once you've learned the system, it's repeatable.
It's a process.
Yeah, so once people get comfortable with asking the question and they'll get results, and whenever you do anything and you get a good result, you're more likely to do it again. Mm. But once it becomes, that ingrained process in how the practice operates, it just becomes a machine. And you just keep adding to your numbers week after week, month after month. Adrian, that was... that was wonderful. I can't believe, like I say, we've been talking for 50 minutes and we've managed to swiftly move through the world of AI into reputational management and reviews all in one go.
And to give some practical hints on getting good reviews.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's a great thing.
And that's the thing, isn't it? You know, quite often it's easy to talk in theoretical terms as to what can be done, but those actual tangible things that people can listen to this, take away and implement, you know, next week.
And just to end on this point, the reason why I wanted to do this, because I speak to so many really wonderful practice owners that feel awkward, they can't get their team kind of inspired behind it. And they're noticing the same thing that I do is that, and I know I don't want to get into the depths of this political conversation sometimes, or sensitive one, is that when I see Facebook ads for dental tourism, Turkish dental practices, the first thing they mention, over 5,000 Google reviews.
Yeah.
And I look at those reviews and they are there. Right? Maybe they pay for them or whatever it might be. Mm. But they are flying the flag for UK patients leaving reviews in a different country. So I understand the issues and the hardships for practices with that. So you've got to do it purely for that reason, just to get ahead, because 100 now doesn't...
Yeah.
Yeah,
but nothing. Going back to those stats you were quoting, social proof is really important, and they know that. And to their credit, they've tapped into it. And arguably, if that means that we all have to raise our game and come up to their standard in terms of marketing and how we promote ourselves... That's actually not a bad thing, you know. If everyone ups their game.
Yeah, definitely.
And remember, really benefits, patients, your staff, and of course you. It's a gift, a gift these reviews.
Yeah, cool.
Adrian, I've got two questions for you. You might remember this from when you joined us time round. So the first question to wrap up is a certain situation. You can be a fly on the wall. You've landed on a wall somewhere. Where are you and who's there?
I just realised that was your fly.
That was my fly, yeah.
Now, we are... Chris isn't going to like this one. You will, Andy. I would like to be fly on the wall in the dressing room when United beat Bayern Munich. I think that would have been just to see that. Either that or when Ryan Giggs scored against Arsenal, remember?
All right, thanks for that. Yeah. I was quite happy with the Bayern Munich one.
Was that just after Dennis Bergkamp missed a penalty?
I'm sorry.
Yes, it was.
The line went all a bit funny then, right? Can I leave a Google review?
So I think, because I remember as a kid, actually, where I'm sat right now, I ran up and down right here as a little boy. When I watch Ollie score that goal,
I slipped off the sofa and slid across the carpet and got carpet burns on both knees. Oh, right.
I did it when Arsenal won at Anfield. Michael Thomas.
So I can
revel in that one.
But I think the interesting thing on that, for people that don't follow this game, Manchester United won the game literally in added time.
And it's a football team, for those of you who really don't know.
But the experience, it wouldn't have taken long from that goal to the game ending, and that energy in that changing room would have been absolutely electric, because it was such a, it happened so quickly.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I mean, it was a good, as a gooner, I must say, it was a very, very exciting moment.
I'd be your fly companion for that one, Adrian. I'd be sitting there with you. So the last one is, if you could meet somebody, if you could sit down with somebody and have a pint of beer, a tequila and pineapple juice, a coffee, whatever it might be, who would you like to sit down with?
It's going to be a football one, and I've changed my mind, but I just find this guy fascinating. It would be Roy Keane, because I just find... I saw him do an interview with Gary Neville. It's like walking the dog. I don't know if you've seen that on YouTube. And I was like, I just want to pick this guy's brain. Like, it's just fine, because, you know, I'm not the biggest United fan in the world, but I love his kind of view on life, very different to mine. So yeah, I think it could be fun having a few pints of Guinness or whatever with him. That's been on my list, I think, now. Not the most ambitious pick, but
I think it would be a very straight talking conversation. I think if you asked him a question, you'd get an answer.
Yeah.
I just want him to say 2 yards. 2 yards.
Oh, be interesting. Yeah, so he's an interesting character.
He is. Adrian, it's been a joy. It's been an absolute joy. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for also sharing just what you know, because you spent a lot of time digging into an area that lots of people just are scared about, uninformed about. And I think you've managed to blow away some of the myths in terms of how it's used and where it's going. But I think the bit around those reviews... There's some real practical tips that people can pick up and use. And like I say, if you could chuck me those links, we'll drop those in
really
the show
good.
Notes. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, we'll do. Definitely.
Thank you much.
Lovely. Look after yourself, Adrian. Always good to speak to you. Keep well.
Yeah, cheers, Adrian.
Cheers. Thank you, always.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dentology, where we discuss the business of dentistry. If you like what you heard, please do subscribe where you found this episode. That would be amazing. And also follow us on Instagram.